exclusives at democracynow.org. But we also have this latest news. Republican Congressmember Karen Handel of Georgia has conceded to Democrat Lucy McBath, African-American gun control activist whose son Jordan Davis was shot and killed in 2012 by a white man. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's 8 o'clock, and this is KBOO Portland. Good morning. Up next, Sojourner Truth Radio, and a review of the 2018 congressional elections.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Mulugeta Sarah Commemorative Conference Tuesday, November 13th. From 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the University Place Hotel and Conference Center in Portland. This half-day conference honors Mulugeta Sarah, 28-year-old Ethiopian college student living in Portland who was murdered by racist skinheads on November 13, 1988. This conference will include panel discussions, continuing legal education for attorneys, and community training on addressing hate. Again, that's the Mulugeta Sarah Commemorative Conference, Tuesday, November 13th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the University Place Hotel and Conference Center, 310 Southwest Lincoln Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. The midterm elections brought an end to one-party rule in Washington, D.C. The Democrats went over the 23 seats they needed to regain a majority in the House of Representatives. Here is how Nancy Pelosi put it. Let's go
Thanks
to that clip
to you,
now.
We owned the ground. Thanks to you. Thanks to you, tomorrow will be a new day in America. Remember this feeling. Know the power to win. And almost all congratulations to those dynamic, diverse, incredible candidates who have taken back the House for the American people. Let us salute all of our candidates. All of our candidates. Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances to the Trump administration. It's about stopping the GOP and Mitch McConnell's assaults on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, and the health care of 130 million Americans living with pre-existing medical conditions. Let's hear it more for pre-existing medical conditions. It's about ending wealthy special interest free reign over Washington. But more than anything, it's about what a new Democratic majority will mean in the lives of hardworking Americans. That's what it's about.
All righty, and that clip was from the Washington Post. However, Trumpism won on the Senate side, extending their majority in the Senate. They won the state Senate races in Tennessee, Indiana, North Dakota, Missouri, Florida, and Texas. In races for governor, Democrats won six new governorships, including ousting Wisconsin's Scott Walker and Chris Kobach in Texas. Also, Michigan, Maine, New Mexico, Illinois, and Nevada also went to Democrats. Of course, Gavin Newsom, as expected, won in California. So did Dianne Feinstein. But in Georgia, a lot of controversy as Stacey Abrams is trying still to become the first black governor of that state. The race right now is too close to call, and there are reports of voter intimidation and suppression. There were heartbreaking losses in Texas of Beto O'Rourke and Gillum in Florida. A spate of progressive measures, one including voting rights for former felons in Florida, keeping a sanctuary law in Oregon, upholding transgender rights in Massachusetts, legalizing marijuana, and increasing the minimum wage in Missouri. Arkansas also increased the minimum wage, and Michigan legalized recreational marijuana. Women's numbers greatly increased in Congress, 100 in the House alone, including 2 Muslim women and 2 Native American women. For supporters of Prop 10 in California, that would have given the possibility of more access to rent control for renters, that went down in defeat. Our panelists today include Bill Gallegos, Jackie Goldberg, Greg Palast, Lynn Washington, Ashley Henderson, and Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Democrats regained control of the House of Representatives but lost ground in the Senate. With their House majority, Democrats will chair key committees. They'll be able to use that power to investigate President Trump's personal and professional deeds. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, who's likely to return as House Speaker, said it's a new day.
We will drain the swamp of dark interest money in our elections. Because when we do, Americans have greater confidence in everything their Congress works on, from health care to taxes to guns to clean air and clean water for our children, when they know that the people's interest will prevail, not the dark special interest.
Trump warned Democrats against using their new majority in the House to investigate his administration. He said in a tweet this morning that if they do, the Republican-controlled Senate may investigate Democrats. It was unclear what he was referring to. Trump will address the midterm election results at a White House news conference this morning. As of early this morning, Democrats had won 219 House races, the Republicans 193. Winners are undetermined in 23 races, including a handful in California. Rashida Tlaib in Michigan and Ilhan Omar of Minnesota will be the first Muslim women to serve in the Congress. Omar addressed her supporters last night.
And I am more than excited that we are gathered here again to make another history. Because we're going to Washington.
Deb Haaland in New Mexico and Charisse Davids in Kansas will be the first Native American congresswomen. Davids is also a lesbian. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York, who ran as a Democratic socialist, will be the first woman in her 20s to serve in Congress. Republicans retained Senate control after ousting Democratic incumbents Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, and Claire McCaskill in Missouri. Nevada Republican Senator Dean Heller, the only Republican incumbent seeking re-election in a state that Hillary Clinton won, became the only Republican senator to lose. Democratic challenger Beto O'Rourke lost his bid to defeat incumbent Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. He offered Cruz support in what appeared to be a backhanded slap at the divisive anti-immigrant campaign Cruz and President Trump waged.
The country's been as polarized as I can remember it in my life. All this bitterness that defines so much of the national conversation today. If there's anything that we can do to help him in his position of public trust, to ensure that Texas helps to lead this country in a way that brings us back together around the big things that we want to achieve.
Three Senate races remain too close to call. In Florida, Arizona, and Montana, Republicans hold a slight lead in all of them. Georgia Democratic gubernatorial nominee Stacey Abrams is not conceding defeat to Republican Secretary of State Brian Kemp in their marquee race. Kemp holds the lead 50.5% to 48.6%. A Libertarian candidate has less than a percentage point. But Abrams said it's too soon to call the race. If Kemp falls below 50%, there'll be a runoff next month.
But I'm here tonight to tell you votes remain to be counted. There are voices that are waiting to be heard. Across our state, folks are opening up the dreams of voters in absentee ballots, and we believe our chance for a stronger Georgia is just within reach. But we cannot seize it until all voices are heard. And I promise you tonight, we're going to make sure that every vote is counted. Every single vote. Every vote's getting counted.
In Florida, Democratic Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum had hoped to make history as the state's first African-American governor. Republican Ron DeSantis beat him by less than a percentage point. In Wisconsin, incumbent Republican Governor Scott Walker lost to his Democratic challenger, Tony Evers. Altogether, Democrats had a net gain of 7 gubernatorial seats. Florida voters approved a ballot measure that will enable an estimated 1.4 million formerly incarcerated people to regain their voting rights. It's the largest enfranchisement of new voters since the Voting Rights Act. Massachusetts voters overwhelmingly affirmed the state's 2-year-old law protecting the rights of transgender people. Arkansas and Missouri voters passed minimum wage increases. Oregon voters rejected a measure that would have repealed the state's first in the nation immigrant sanctuary law. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. I would now like to welcome our panelists for this first part of our show. I'd like to welcome Jackie Goldberg, who served in the California State Assembly, also on the Los Angeles City Council. And before that, she served on and was later president of the Los Angeles School Board. She's been an educator all of her life, currently on contract with the mayor's office in Los Angeles to bring jobs back. Jackie Goldberg, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, I'd also like to welcome Bill Gallegos, longtime Chicano liberation and environmental justice activist. He is the author of The Sunbelt Strategy and Chicano Liberation and Reflections on the Green Economy. He also served as the former executive director of Communities for a Better Environment, one of the leading environmental justice organizations in the U.S. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret. Good morning.
And also joining us, Lynn Washington Jr., award-winning journalist who's covered the Mumia Abu-Jamal case since December of 1981, a graduate of Yale Law Journalism Fellowship. Lynn Washington writes regularly on issues involving law, the criminal justice system, news media, and inequities involving race and or class. He describes himself as an information junkie. He teaches multimedia urban reporting at Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Lynn, welcome.
Good morning, Margaret.
Okay. What we're going to do now, before getting your reactions, let's hear some of the voices of voters. And these were voters from yesterday and across the spectrum. Let's go to that clip now.
I like my freedom. I really do. I feel that we can't say what we want to say, and that hurts me. And I've seen nothing but good, so I'm really scared. I feel like I'm going to be like the Democrats when they lost with Hillary, that if we don't win as Republicans, the House and the Senate, and to lose everything, oh my God, that's just heartbreaking. It really is.
Our president, I can't even put the name and the word president together. It's so like, to me, he appears irrational and uneducated. and the way that he thinks about people, it's cold and ugly, and he's confusing. How he got to that place is confusing to me. It's not rational. I don't know what happened.
Well, immigration is very important living on the border. So that's part of it, and I think Ted Cruz is going to handle that problem a lot better than anybody else.
It was interesting just hearing Ted Cruz. I've never really heard of him. The first time I heard of him was because of Jimmy Kimmel. So he never really made an impact in Texas. Bet they're running made an impact, and that's how everybody got to vote so early, and there was such a good turnout.
You mean talking about Beto?
Yes.
You mean people hadn't heard of him?
No, Ted Cruz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I never heard of... I didn't even know he was in our Senate.
What do you make of the Senate race with Ted Cruz and Beto? Because Beto's from here. I mean, there's been a lot of attention on it.
As far as I'm concerned, it's the man versus the boy.
A lot of Republican women in this district are voting Democratic this year.
Is that surprising to you?
Not at all.
And I guess for you, what's at stake in this election?
Everything's at stake. I've always, supported women's health care, but I'm so frightened about what's happening in Washington, D.C. in terms of like autocratic policies. I really do think, seriously, I'm overstating it. I really do think democracy, the way we've experienced it in the past, is at risk.
You just don't know where you're safe. The kids at the school in Florida, I mean, just no matter where you are, it's like I'm almost reluctant to go to big events at the arena or to ball games at the arena or anywhere because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that's a terrible thing to fear. So, I don't know. I believe in a lot of what Trump says. I think a lot of it is, he's a businessman. He's used to going in and saying, this is bad. I don't like the way it's running. We're going to change it.
We've entered this sort of frenzy of xenophobia and nationalism to this degree that is unhealthy and historically bad for any country.
All righty. There you go. That's from the Washington Post. And that was just some of what voters had to say. Jackie Goldberg, we're going to start with you and get your take on what were your takeaways from the election, the midterms.
Well, I think the most important thing would be the role of women. I think the most women will be in the House that has ever been. 100, I think, were elected last night. I think you also saw the youngest woman ever elected. That's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's only 29 years old and a Democratic Socialist at that. We saw two Muslim women and two Native American women. We saw the first black congresswoman in Massachusetts get elected. We saw the first Native American congresswoman to be elected. We saw Michelle Lujan Grisham, New Mexico's first Latina governor. I mean, women are the story, I think. I think the fact that we took back the House in good part, had to do with the fact that there were so many women and young men who were running in seats, and I think that's for me the big takeaway. I also have to add that Jared Polis is the first openly gay man to win a governor's race, and he is now the governor of Colorado. I think that too it tells you something about where the country is moving. I was very disappointed to lose both Heidi Heitkamp and Claire McCaskill. I think that's a real shame. I'm very, very sorry that we didn't quite make it in Florida's governor's race. But I would say overall, people of color and women came to the polls in record numbers for midterms, not in every state, but in many states. And as a result of their efforts, both in raising money in small amounts and without PACs, and in running people who were from those communities, who had the understanding of their communities and worked hard, I think we saw some real hope for the future in the next 2020 elections. I think the big news for me, though, was taking back five, I think at least five governorships. because that affects how districts are drawn. But we're still way behind in the state legislatures. They're being far more controlled entirely by Republicans.
Right. Thank you, Jackie Goldberg. Bill Gallegos, your thoughts.
Yeah, I.
Oh, sorry. There's some background noise. Please go on mute, someone. Okay. Sorry, Bill. Carry on.
Well, I think it's very, very important that the Democrats took the House. It's important that there is an arena in which we can contend with, you know, really have some leverage for the resistance, and to really put a break on some of Trump's policies and to offer an alternative to his really reactionary program. So I think that was very, very important. And I think it's significant because on the whole, I think it was an interesting mess. The elections were an interesting mess. For example, in Florida, where Gillum lost, and he was a very, very strong candidate, on the other hand, the voters in Florida voted to re-enfranchise felons who have served their term. So I think it tells you that there's really an incredibly strange mixture of politics that are being played out. But I think it's very, very significant, the gains that Jackie pointed out, because the Republicans threw down in this election. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, in these elections. They ran just a terrible program of campaigns, especially around immigration. And that's one of my really strong disappointments in this election. And it came out in Nancy Pelosi's victory speech. She didn't mention the issue of immigration. And it really bothers me that the Democrats ran from the issue instead of taking it on and being affirmative in supporting immigrant rights, the rights of refugees, and opposing this ethnic cleansing campaign that's being undertaken by the Trump administration. I think it's also significant that Latino voting was significantly higher than in past elections, and that is going to continue to be an important demographic. Nearly 25% of voters in this election were African American or Latino. On the other hand, 27% of voters are white evangelicals, and they're overwhelmingly Republican voters. So there's a lot of work to be done, I think, by white progressives in organizing that community, because white voters continue, in large part, especially white males, to support the most reactionary and backward candidacies. So I think there's a lot of room, I think, for building the social movements. Now we have a lot more leverage because of the congressional victories, and I think in California some of the things are still in doubt, but it's possible that Tony Thurmond may win the election for state superintendent of public instruction, despite a massive campaign by the charter schools and the billionaires to try to defeat him. It was a really negative campaign that they waged against Tony, and that's so it's significant that election hasn't been finally decided, but there's still a possibility that he could win. And I think that's very, very important in the fight to defend public education in California.
Right. Thank you, Bill. And Lynn Washington, having you weigh in here, you know, Lynn, I'm looking at a headline of an article that was published in Portside that said the American Civil War didn't end and Trump is a Confederate president. I mean, I think they make a strong case. They're saying this is the 158th year of the American Civil War, also known as 2018, and that the Confederacy continues its recent resurgence. It does seem though, that, I mean, given what Bill just said about Pelosi not even mentioning immigration, while Trump was certainly using that issue as a wedge, I mean, demonizing the migrant caravan that is in Mexico right now, I think in Mexico City, but also it, you know, there is some hope that given the Democrats taking the majority in the House, I mean, it remains to be seen what they'll do with it. But the end, you know, it's the end of a one party rule right now, some are saying in Washington, D.C. Lynn, your thoughts?
Well, I embraced remarks of the others who've spoken. As Jackie noted, it is the time of women in the Philadelphia area, particularly in the suburban ring. Four women were elected to Congress, and that helped contribute to the change in who runs Congress. But as Phil was saying, there's a lot of issues that are really salient in America that were not adequately addressed and have not been addressed by the Democrats. I read something earlier this morning by a columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, Philly.com. And I think it really fits into one of the overarching themes in America, not just the election. And he said in part that maybe it's time to look less at Trump and more deeply into America's soul. Dishonest appeals to racism, xenophobia, and misogyny only work when millions of voters are receptive to hearing them. And that's what we saw all across the country. I mean, the fact that there's just such this urban, suburban, rural divide, I think is reflective of that. Here in the Philadelphia area, it includes New Jersey, you know, South Jersey, eastern Pennsylvania, and Delaware. There's a candidate in a race for Congress in New Jersey, a guy named Seth Grossman. He was so gross in his racism that even the Republican Party had to distance himself from him. But this guy's position is that diversity is a bunch of crap, an un-American, quote-unquote. He was disparaging of females. He said that immigrants are robbing, you know, taking money away from the middle class. He calls Islam a cancer. This guy got 47% of the votes that were cast, and at this point, that election is kind of too close to call. So what does that say about America and about the soul of America? The thing, though, that heartened me about this whole electoral process in this midterm was that more and more people have been engaged, regardless of what side of the equation you're on, and I was glad to do a larger turnout of people on the progressive and democratic side. And I look to Philadelphia, the birthplace of democracy. In the primary election in May, the turnout was a little less than 17%. But yesterday, the turnout jumped to 51%.
Lynn, hold that thought. We're getting a lot of static on your line. I'm not quite sure. Maybe hold the phone a little closer or shift your position somewhat. I want our listeners to hear every word. Okay, carry on, Lynn.
Right.
Sorry about that.
I was just saying in Philadelphia, yesterday the turnout was 51%. That was a huge increase over the May primary when the turnout was less than 17%. So this engagement and people getting re-engaged or engaged for the first time in the political process, I think, is one of the good outcomes. And if we can thank the current president for anything, it's getting more people energized about politics and trying to take some involvement in their government and the way the government works.
Right. And we just literally have about 3 minutes or so before we have to go to our next panel. So if each of you could just take a minute or so to give us some final thoughts, and we'll start with you, Jackie Goldberg.
Well, I think it's very important that the president is already threatening Democrats that the Senate will investigate them. He knows what's coming. I think taking back the House means that there'll finally be some curbs on this president. We don't have to assume that every time he speaks, he gets exactly what he wants. And finally, I think that we're going to see that the building of both people of color and women as both candidates as well as voters is going to continue into the 2020 election.
Yeah, Bill Gallegos.
Yeah, I think what this election shows is this is an arena where progressives and the left are accelerating their participation. I think that's very important. And we're seeing, for example, important wins by progressives like Alexandria, like Nikki Fortunato Bass in Oakland, like the passage of Measure W here, the water measure for water conservation with equity in Los Angeles. So this is not
the electoral arena is not the only arena for the struggle for power, but it's an important one. And I think it's really positive that there's so much increased participation by people of color, by women, by young folks, and by folks on the progressive side. So I think that's a good takeaway from this. And it's a very big step forward for us in our fight to really transform this country.
Right. Thank you, Bill Gallegos. And Lynn Washington, your final thoughts.
I would just say that what happened yesterday was great in terms of participation, but that's only a first step. Now is the accountability. People need to stay on the elected officials and make sure that the issues that are of import to this country, to our very future, are really addressed. And that means not waiting till the next election cycle. That means every day and every week and every month, making sure that the issues and the needs of the American public are fully and fairly addressed.
All righty. Thank all of you. We could really carry on this discussion further, but thank each of you for joining us and sharing your thoughts the day after the midterms of 2018. Thank you. We are going to take a short station break, and we're going to be continuing our discussion. Waiting to join us, Ashley Henderson, who describes herself as a Black Appalachian working class woman. She is with the Highlander Research and Education Center and an active participant in the movement for Black Lives. And Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons, who formerly was with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. She is based in Florida, where she is an assistant professor of religion and women's studies. And Greg Pallas, also waiting to speak with us. We'll be right back. Alrighty, and that song is Give More Power to the People by the Chilites. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this post-midterm election special from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. If you're a member of Facebook, you can check us out on Facebook. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, and we are also on SoundCloud. And today I would like to give a shout out to all those on the front lines of the battle still going on in the state of Georgia. And internationally, we'd like to give a shout out to our listeners in Russia. Turns out we do have some listeners in Russia. So we are now going to continue our post-election coverage. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And what I'd like to do now is to welcome our next round of panelists. Let us start with welcoming Ashley Henderson. She is an Afro-Latian, a Black Appalachian working class woman born and raised in Southeast Tennessee. She is the co-executive director of the Highlander Research and Education Center, as well as an active participant in the movement for Black Lives. She has extensive experience with community organizing and is a staff member of Chicago SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee History Project. She's been involved in a number of other things, from Students Against Sweatshop, Student Environmental Action Coalition, and more. Ashley, welcome.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks, Margaret, for having me.
Okay. Also on the line, I'd like to welcome Zahara Simmons, Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons, currently Assistant Professor of Religion and Affiliated Faculty in the Women's Studies Department at her university. She's based in Florida, and she has a very extensive biography. You have to know about Zahara, as I call her, very active with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. She has been an activist really all of her life. She's had a long history in the area of civil rights, human rights, and peace work. She spent 7 years working full-time on voter registration and desegregation activities in Mississippi, Georgia, and Alabama during the height of the civil rights movement with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Zahara, welcome.
Thank you very much, and good morning to your listening audience.
Okay, what I'd like to do now for both of you, just to do a short clip here, you'll hear from, the two governors that three that people were really hoping for. One in Georgia, we'll be talking about that in the next segment. Very contentious, too close to call. A heartbreak loss in Texas and also in Florida, with Beto O'Rourke and Gillum in Florida. So let's go to a clip now to hear what both of them had to say last night.
This was, from the very beginning, an extremely, extremely difficult task. I sincerely regret that I couldn't bring it home for you. I can guarantee you this. I'm not going anywhere. We're going to fight. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep working. We're going to keep believing.
We offer our experience and our perspective and our courage and our confidence on the issues that we know best as one half of the largest binational community anywhere in the Americas, joined with Ciudad Juarez to form something powerful, magical, and nothing to be afraid of or walled off or to apologize for. I want to make sure that this proud community offers all it has to give to this country, into our future, into ensuring that our greatest days are still ahead, and that the policy that we craft and the laws that we write and the way in which we treat each other comes not out of fear, but comes out of confidence and strength and this kind heart that I've always known El Paso to have. I know that we will continue to work to come together, to make sure that we live up to the promise and the potential of this country. I know it because I've met you everywhere that you are. I've listened to you everywhere that you live.
All righty. And that first voice, of course, Andrew Gillum, who lost in Florida to DeSantis, who is such an obvious racist. It's just incredible. And the last voice was Beto O'Rourke giving a very upbeat speech there, conceding his defeat in Texas. So, Zahara, we're going to start with you. You're on the ground in Florida. You have my sympathy, but also in Florida, you pulled out a very important measure there in terms of former felons who now have the right to vote. But Zahara, your thoughts here on the election?
Well, as you might imagine, I am amongst thousands of us who worked so hard for Andrew Gillum, and we are, very, very sad.
Yeah.
I just heard a moment ago on one of the national channels that votes, are still being counted, and there are many in the Gillum camp who think that he, should not have
conceded,
given up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, should not have. And so I don't know, but it's got to be within the margin of 5% for there to be an automatic recall, and I don't think he's reached that level yet. But anyway, I'm very sad. I'm very glad that Stacey Abrams is fighting on, because clearly that election was stolen. The situation overall, I'm trying to, stop crying in my coffee this morning over Gillum.
Yeah.
In spite of the DeSantis win, which is, it's just, he's horrible. It's unbelievable. as you know, we also could possibly wind up with Rick Scott.
Yeah.
A horrible criminal, really. A governor who that has not been called yet. So Nelson is hanging on by a thread. So if we get Scott representing Florida in the United States Senate, and we have DeSantos, and we lost a number of other very important ones at the state level. So Florida, you know, racism reigns very heavily in this state. There's no other way that one could understand how the people in the panhandle who were devastated by the hurricane could vote for a climate change denier.
Right.
In the numbers that they did, if it were not for racism. So, as someone said earlier in your last segment, we are a very divided nation. The Civil War is still being played out.
Yeah, I really believe this election was so much about race. And also, Zahara, you know, you were in the thick of it in the Deep South during the Civil Rights era. And did you think, as you were working back then, that in 2018 you would basically be crying in your morning cup of coffee now? Just your thoughts. I mean, from back then to now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's because we did get the gains that we made. Of course, when I was in the thick of it, you know, in 1962, 63, 64, I didn't even know if we were going to be successful. So, of course, with the passage of the Voting Rights Act and
right.
with the passage of the Civil Rights Act and with the huge numbers of African Americans being able to register to vote and to run for office. And of course, I was in Mississippi this summer on a civil rights tour with students and, you know, visiting many of the places where, you know, you would just be killed, shot dead for even showing up at the courthouse trying to register or to vote. And now black people are, you know, in office in all of those places. So we do, you know, that is one part of it. But then the other part is, you know, Trump and Rick Scott and DeSantos, that just shows me, you know, the struggle continues. And in many ways, the Republicans and those who are in that camp, they never stopped undermining the gains that we made.
That's right.
So we're looking at a plan that has been in effect for at least 30 years, and they're marching relentlessly on. I'm so worried about the governorships, you know, the Supreme Court, the other federal judges, I'm sorry, the judges, because, of course, these lifetime appointments, even if we were to take the White House in 2020 and take the Senate, we have those lifetime judges. So it's very serious. And as Lynn Washington said, just because the election ended, maybe we take today off and dust ourselves off, but tomorrow we start right back organizing for 2020.
And Ashley, thank you, Zahara Simmons. Ashley Henderson, you're basically the next generation here. And you heard what Zahara had to say. And I wanted to get your reaction. You're active with the Movement for Black Lives. And, you know, here we are, your reaction to this. This election is so much about race.
Absolutely. I mean, I think first of all, I would say that whatever Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons says is what I believe. And I'm grateful and honored to be on this broadcast with you all. I mean, I think a few things. As an individual that's, you know, supportive of the Movement for Black Lives, I think we said exactly what we meant yesterday, that we were grateful to black people for engaging in a system that all too often fails us.
Yeah.
But that we have the right to control, and that regardless of what happened,
on November 6th that we would be back in the ring with an oppressive Trump regime, and we would be fighting the right, and that when we come together to do that together, that we can't help but win. I think that what we know for sure is that Gillum conceded. He did not lose. He helped garner the energy of a emerging leadership of Black and Brown and queer and differently abled and like poor and working class folks in Florida. And as Zahara said, we're still watching. A concession is not a legally binding agreement. If it comes within 0.5% margin, a recount will trigger, and regardless of his concession. And so, although I don't think that we're naive to think that the right will concede so easily, I think that, our desire, I'm in the camp that thinks that we deserve leaders that will fight for us. I think I'm in Georgia right now, and was up with folks from the campaign till about 2 o'clock, 2:30, 3 o'clock this morning. And I think what we know for sure right now is that there are at least 25,000 ballots that could potentially trigger a runoff in December. And so, thank goodness and thank movement and thank Stacey Abrams for continuing to fight. We know that there are ballots in Cobb County and DeKalb County, where I was yesterday, and Gwinnett County, where I was yesterday, and that there are other large areas like Athens, Clark, Chatham, Douglas, and Henry that haven't tallied mail-in ballots, right? This is not over. The conversation has not been complete. And to expect a concession last night when there are still tens of thousands of ballots still to be recognized, I think, is egregious and is only a sign to me, both between that the expectation of that and the extreme voter suppression that we saw not only in Georgia but across the South and across the United States, that disproportionately impacted Indigenous, Latinx, and Black and working class people, that democracy in this country is a myth, that it's aspirational at best. And so not only is there, I think, a necessity of continuing to agitate within this flawed system, right, to fight for electoral justice in an arena that we know is literally set up to harm us, and to keep us blocked out of it, it's also necessary that we build the alternatives as well to this system. And I think that what I feel excited about is that we aren't starting from scratch. Folks like Zahara, folks in SNCC, folks in the Black Panther Party, folks in the Black Radical Congress, many of our elders and ancestors that are gone and still with us, it taught us, and we're not starting from scratch. And we're learning those lessons, and we're committed to building a world where capitalism doesn't exist, because we don't believe that Black people can thrive under this system.
Right, and hold that thought. What I'd like to now bring into this discussion, Greg Pallas, who's also on the ground in Georgia. He's the author of several New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Armed Madhouse. And his investigative reports have been on BBC Television, The Guardian, Rolling Stone, and much more. Also, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, The Case of the Stolen Election. Greg, welcome.
Glad to be with you, and hi to my homies in LA.
Right. And Greg, what I want to do is just play a short clip from your website about what was going on in Georgia yesterday.
To exercise their right to vote, that's a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, my right was taken from me.
This is where you would normally vote?
Yes.
The name didn't come up, and yours didn't come up. He went out to search the state.
Raheem went to vote, but they didn't let him vote on a ballot. They gave him a provisional ballot, a placebo ballot. You think you voted, but maybe not.
What you'll be doing today is a provisional ballot. You can follow up anytime.
Once I get the provisional ballot, the lady hands me it looked like a biohazard bag. I have no number to verify that I actually voted. These are the tactics of Brian Kemp, and this is voter suppression, and he is the chief of voter suppression under the leadership of the racist in chief, Donald Trump.
Has this ever happened to you before?
Never.
How long have you been voting?
All my life, ever since I was old enough. But I've been voting right here ever since 1968.
Yeah. And it's just, it's horrible. And I say that because the West End, she's been in this community back when we could, when they were doing sit-ins. She held civil rights meetings in her home. And today to come out and not be able to vote and no one can give you an explanation, like, it's extremely emotional and it bothers me. It bothers me to my core. Like, there's actually no record of her whatsoever voting in any election whatsoever, and it's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Greg Palace, I'm in tears. And Zahara and Ashley on the line also, as you know. Greg,
yes.
What's going on here?
Jim Crow, like I've never seen it. I've been covering election suppression of the black vote for 18 years, beginning in Florida when, you know, I covered that Catherine Harris moved thousands of black folk for the voter rolls. That's how, by calling them felons, they were, their only crime was voting while black. That's how George Bush got elected. 18 years later, this is worse than anything I saw in Florida, in Ohio, in all over this nation. This was the brand new Jim Crow, or Dr. James Crow, database operator. What I discovered, and by the way, I had to sue Brian Kemp in federal court to get the names of all those voters that he purged, 500,000 Georgians in a single year with no notice. You've lost your vote. So all these people, I'm talking hundreds of thousands of people, are showing up not knowing that they don't have a right to vote anymore. Some didn't show up because they didn't get the notice. They're being told just go away, and those who know a little bit more are asking for provisional ballots. So you heard Raheem Shabazz, the great filmmaker here in Atlanta. I went with him to the polls. He knew his rights. So even though they took away his vote illegally, just so you know, Brian Kemp said that 500,000 people, mostly voters of color, had left Georgia, that they moved away, and I didn't see moving trucks all over the road. So I sued them in federal court, got the names and addresses, had four of the top consulting firms in America go through name by name with computers, obviously. We found 340,134 voters, which we are telling the federal court exactly, these voters never moved anywhere. Brian Kemp made up this whole game. He took away 250,000 votes of people we know of, and we estimate another 200,000 that we expect to uncover once we get him under oath. And this is, it's so large, it's hard to imagine. So I was there when Raheem was handed this, what I call the placebo ballot, which is the provisional ballot. And here, ready? Brian Kemp is the guy, as Raheem said, Brian Kemp's the guy who gets to decide whether that ballot gets counted. He's already ruled that even if someone is purged from the voter rolls, had their registration canceled, and it's Brian Kemp's own fault because he got it wrong, he's still not going to count that vote. He's saying, purge is purge, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
We may have to go to federal court to get that straightened out. And you heard a 92-year-old woman, Christine Jordan. So when I was with Raheem, she was coming out in her walker, 92 years old. She voted the same place for 50 years, since the year Martin Luther King was murdered, and they wiped out her voter registration. You heard her granddaughter in tears. You know what they did to this woman? They didn't even hand her a provisional ballot. That's the other problem. We were told by elections officials in Trump Kemp areas that only deserving people even get provisional ballots.
Yeah.
So Stacey Abrams has now said, until votes are counted, she's not conceding anything, and she expects, in fact, to push for those votes. It's a very refreshing thing to hear from a Democrat.
Good for her. And, yeah. Greg, give us your website. I want to get some final thoughts on this also from Zahara and Ashley.
Yes.
Give us your website where people could get this information, Greg.
You can see the 92-year-old voter. You can see Raheem and get the information at GregPalace.com, GREG. PALAST.com.
Right. And Zahara, I mean, I literally was in tears with that 92-year-old woman who was not allowed to vote. And I'm also looking at an article. This is also for you, Ashley, that of the people who didn't vote, that 70% of registered voters who chose not to vote were younger than 45 years old, right? Yesterday on the show, I played a clip of Fannie Lou Hamer being beat as she fought for the right to vote. Just a final thought. Let's go to you, actually, Ashley, and then we'll hear final thoughts from Zahara.
Sure. I mean, I think that as a person under 40, that what I'm seeing in this country is not, and in my region as a proud Southerner, is not a voter apathy problem. I talked to people all day yesterday, and I've talked to people this whole election cycle, and talked to people for the entirety of my experience in movement about voting. And what I've never heard is like, oh, I just don't care. What I've heard is very passionate responses about a flawed system, and that, quite frankly, as Sherelle Brown says, is that we do not have a voter apathy problem in this country. We have the white supremacy problem in this country. And folks know that, whether it's because they've been disenfranchised because of their relationship to the carceral state, whether it's because of class or race or gender, whether it's because of ability or based on who you love, that this system is literally set up to harm us. And simultaneously, I think what we know is that when our elders and ancestors said by any means necessary, they meant by all the means, and that included voting, but wasn't the only path to liberation. I think what the left consistently does is shame folks who decide that the way that they are going to participate in the system is by not participating. And I don't think that that's ever organized one voter to go to the polls. I think we need a strategy. And I think that in the absence of a strategy where the left stops conceding territory to the right, whether it's the church, whether it's rural communities where black people live, whether it's inner city communities where poor black people live, cash poor black people live, we've got to have a strategy that does not concede our folks, because when we do, we see red states. When we do, we see people being left out. So I think what I don't see is voter apathy. What I see is systemic challenges to actually living our fullest lives in dignity and living into our fullest humanity.
Right. And Zahara, your final thoughts here. I mean, you know, I think that a lot of the left and progressive people have difficulty holding two seemingly contradictory things in their heads. That, yes, you can be a revolutionary and want change. And yes, you can go out and vote and, you know, stop Trumpism as well. And maybe I'm a little sensitive on it, maybe because my cousin Martha Prescott was out there with you and so many others, and remembering the great sacrifice that people made, and none of us thought that voting was the only way to go or that was going to be the thing to make change. But it is, it seems to me, part of what we have to do. I wonder your thoughts on that, Zahara.
I totally agree with you. And here, you know, I've been preaching on the campus of the University of Florida to students who, you know, are so lackadaisical about voting, even in a class on civil rights that I'm teaching. I, you know, didn't find people enthusiastic about this this election, and I was like, are you kidding me? Yes, let me just go back to what you said. We always knew that voting was not a panacea, that it was not the only way to bring about change, but it was an important part of our efforts to bring about change. We must organize people into organizations in which they learn about their rights, they learn how their rights are being taken from them, they learn that it's only when we unite, when we become informed about our rights and what it is and how you go about exercising those rights, that we can bring about the change that we all want in healthcare, in work place possibilities of expanding the workplaces for people who've been shut out of having meaningful work. I mean, these, we still have the possibility of bringing about change by being organized.
Right.
We must organize.
Zahara, I'm afraid we are out of time, but what I'd like to do, Ashley and Zahara, is I'd really like to organize an in-depth cross-generational discussion exactly on these issues, because it goes very deep. There's a lot of feeling about it, and there's a lot at stake. Is that okay? I'll be in touch with you all about that.
Let's do it. I'd love it.
And thank you so much, Greg Palace, for your work over the years. We are
Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're out of time. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives. I'd like to thank our board op, Gary Baca, and our assistant producer, Romero Funes. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Later this morning at 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Stephen Allred, author of the new novel, The Ale House at the End of the World, published by Portland's Forest Avenue Press. At 11:30, Words and Pictures, the creators of the absurdist sci-fi graphic novel BTTMFDRS talk about their work. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm. Click on Donate. It's 9 o'clock. Press Watch is next.
KBOO is excited to announce that this Thursday, November 8th, is our big giveaway with Willamette Week Give Guide. When you give $10 or more to KBOO on Thursday, November 8th, you will be entered into a raffle for a $500 gift card to Powell's Bookstore to be used for turning the pages of all the banned books you can't wait to get your fingers on, for those of you 35 and under. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. Authors have been interviewed on our air for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today, and you also get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten-Free Gem,